You're listening to RIA Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RIAradio.com.
All right, dude, so it sounds like, I don't want to like sum up this whole thing, but it sounds like your whole approach has been based on burring apartment buildings, mm-hmm. and it's gone like crazy good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have how many units to date?
Today,
ish.
But, well, I'd say last time it was 600, so we got some stuff in the contract right now. Probably next month, probably around 650 doors.
650 doors. Have you ever bought a property that had like a bunch of like different rando stuff on it, where you have like a seven unit, and then there's like a single family house, and then a storefront, and then just like a completely random deal that you happen to come across from a seller?
Hodgepodge.
So yeah. No, I never done anything like that, because when I'm looking like multifamily. It just, that's what I'm looking like. If it's a 10 unit, but in a normal apartment, I just like, I don't really look at probably a house. We probably, they turn it to apartments and stuff like that. I wouldn't buy something like that. So if I buy it, just for me to resell it.
Okay. What makes a good deal for you? Let's say you are, you know, operating your business. It's a Monday. You are like, I need to find another deal to buy. What's that look like? What's your day to day?
But just I'm looking to see. Mostly I'm looking at, is it distressed? I want it distressed. It has to be distressed. If it's not distressed, nowadays I'm looking at to see how I can kind of increase the income,
value add,
yeah. and stuff like that. But back then I was like, look, it has to be distressed. And then
now, when you say distressed, do you mean the seller is distressed, or the property is distressed, or both?
The seller cannot take care of the property.
So they're motivated.
Yeah. The seller cannot take care of the property. And then I'm looking at per door. So it's just like, let's say, the seller, just last time I bought a property, I bought it probably, I'm trying to get it at 30 or 40 or 50 a door. And then I'm willing to put another 5,000 into the units, each unit. I bought it like, last time I bought a 10 unit, for 55 a door. So I'm willing to put another 5,000 a
Okay. A unit. All right. This is good. Let's go off of this metric. So a per door cost, I think, is something that everybody can understand. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you buy a 10-plex for 500 grand, it's 50 grand a door. Mm-hmm. And then the math is, you know, reasonably easy after that. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's complicated once you're actually doing it, but it's like, okay, you buy something for 50 grand a door, mm-hmm. it's going to cost you what to completely rehab a unit?
I'm just trying to see. I say, okay, I'll put 5,000 a door into each unit.
Okay, what does that buy you? Like, what improvements are you putting in for 5K a door?
I'll do new floor, new. If I have to do new cabinet, I'll do new cabinet. Or if I have to just paint the cabinet, I just paint the cabinet. And then the bathroom, probably turn the bathroom a little nicer. And then stuff like that. Just if I have to put the countertop, change the countertop, put kind of newer countertop. And
okay, so paint, fixtures, flooring mm-hmm. is kind of the main thing. Yeah, so a cosmetic lift, you refresh it a little bit.
And then probably do new windows. If the windows are older windows, put new windows and all the building, and probably go ahead and paint the whole building too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I need to get your contractors numbers. Yeah,
but
obviously.
They work for me. They're just full time for me.
Okay, so they're in house. So you're averaging
in-house.
That. Okay,
They're in house. The only thing I'm looking for right now, I'm looking for an electrician. Once I get an electrician, I got everything right.
I got some leads I can give you.
So, yeah. It's just, that's what I'm looking for right now.
Okay, this is interesting because.
But you got to share them if you take them, by the way.
Yeah. Okay, so there's different like ways to go about this, right? So you hit a point where you have economy of scale, and you start getting to a point where you've got like a whole bunch of units under management. You mentioned 100 doors was kind of the point where you felt comfortable in hiring somebody.
Yep.
And then you have gone way past that. Mm-hmm. But there's people that only use third party. They do 1099 relationships with their mm-hmm. vendors, mm-hmm. and they don't bring anything in house. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you went the other way.
I went the other way.
So let's pro con this. Mm-hmm. as a thought exercise here, because you'll have people like John Hoich, who we had on. It was probably the last episode that you guys heard, but this is going to air a little bit later. So this is episode 112. And John Hoich was
about a month ago.
111?
About a month ago from this point.
Yep. So John talked about, basically, he decided early on, he was like, I'm going to hire the pros. They're going to do it. I'm going to pay them for it. I want somebody that's going to do a kick-ass job managing this. Mm-hmm. And he's got, I don't know. I mean, he's got a lot of shit.
4,000 units or something.
Like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So he's got a whole bunch of stuff. We'll fact check Ted's outlandish claim here.
Every time.
You decided to go the other way, and we've had other people on that have gone in-house. So they've said, this makes no sense. We're not getting any benefit out of just paying this ridiculous price every month for people to manage our and repair our stuff.
Yeah, right.
We want to bring in-house people we trust. Yep. We know them. Mm-hmm. We can save costs and so forth. Mm-hmm. I want to pro-con this. What do you think from your experience in doing this? How long have you had in-house staff handling this kind of thing?
So since probably 2020, so that's when I have in-house start. Probably I hired my first person, a manager, in 2020.
Okay.
And so yeah, because with that way, I learned a lot about the business, about managing, about all this stuff. So now I kind of have an understanding about how to kind of manage tenants and stuff like that. So, and then all the money kind of stand. I don't have to kind of give a management company probably 8%, 10% of the gross. So I think that, so I like it. So now my thing is just now every 200 unit I have somewhere, I have one manager and then two maintenance guy.
Okay.
So for every 200 doors.
And they work just for you?
Just for me.
Okay.
Just so I have some 1099 and then my manager is probably a W-2.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is two maintenance guys enough for 200 units?
No, I said for every 200 because I have 200 doors in Sioux City, so I have two maintenance guys there. I have 200 doors in Beatrice, I have two maintenance guys there. I have some 80 unit here in Omaha, so I have one maintenance guy here.
Right. So yeah, so that's what I was asking. Is 200? Is two guys enough for 200 units?
That's the ratio. Yeah. Yep.
How many service tickets do you usually have are pending right now, like per 200 units? Like, are they keeping up?
The good thing with me, I have some, because I have a lot of renovation. At the same time, I have renovation. I have another two guys that go ahead can do all the renovation for me. So I can send them anywhere in town.
Well, I think that what you're kind of referring to is, I know that my property manager, he's like we are constantly about 30 to 40 service tickets behind. They have six guys on about 600 units.
I don't know, but for me, see, I'm kind of a guy that if I have more than probably 15 maintenance behind, so I'm gonna try to figure out what my maintenance guy is doing.
Right.
Because if you know my clock, because they're all on my clock, I'm trying to figure out what you're doing. Because every day, at least for 8 hours, I'm expecting you to probably do probably six or eight maintenance
right.
thing to get done.
How many maintenance guys have you cycled through since starting?
A lot, man. I come to my office, I have maintenance guys sleeping.
Wow.
So yeah, he's just bad. I pass a lot of maintenance guys. Yeah. A lot of maintenance guy, but now I think I have some great guys working for me right now. And then also I have some guys just like, they just come in, I send them anywhere. And Sioux City, go ahead, go spend a week, get this work done for me, go back to Beatrice, stay in Omaha, go in Anoa, just stay there for a whole week, take care of that, get that work
so
done.
So you
for
put
me.
Them up in like an Airbnb or a hotel?
One of my units, you just
stay one,
there.
Units,
yeah, there one of my units, just send that unit and then just get the work done. And then when you're done, move, go somewhere. Because like right now, I purchased that 10 unit probably last week. They're there right now, kind of turn a few unit there for me, just stay there. Right here, just for the
Don't go home.
Don't go anywhere. Just sleep there. Stay there. You get the whole unit done, and then you move to the next one. Yeah. So now I just right now.
I love that.
The people that I have now working, they're just great people.
Well, yeah. It reminds me of the Universal podcast that never came out with Sanjay. He did hotel flipping, mm-hmm. and he's like, I got 30 guys that come in and work in a hotel, and they live in a hotel until it's done.
Yep.
So it's the same type of thing.
That's right.
So what are you excited about right now in your industry? Like, if you've been in this for quite a few years, you see this, you see how the market is these days.
Yep. Like, so just my goal now is just kind of, because I have a lot of stuff in Beatrice, because it's just a sub-market, Beatrice.
What do you think about Beatrice anyway?
Because I love Beatrice.
What do you love about it? Beatrice is a small town in Nebraska, small town, by the way.
It's just small town, but I'm buying stuff cheaper, the same that I can buy them in Omaha.
Like
but
20, 30K a door?
I say right now I'm buying a 50, 60 a door right now.
Okay, okay. But, and then, double what I is, guys.
Yeah. But now, and then at the same time, the rent is the same as Omaha.
Really?
So yeah, so I can rent. And Beatrice, right now I'm renting a one bedroom for $750 bucks.
And you have a separate management company that runs it in Beatrice alone.
Beatrice, yeah, I got somebody in Beatrice just sit there. Wow. Every 200 doors, I have one manager.
How often are you going to these different cities?
For me, that my wife don't want me, but I try to go. Probably. Now I have a conversation with Sean. I think Sean was here.
Sean Gomez.
He was talking to me about how he said, don't go to none of his property when talking to him and stuff like that. Now I'm starting not to go to my property. I probably try to go probably once a week. Used to go probably twice, three
to times. To Sioux City and Beatrice in Omaha.
Like drive-bys, check them out.
I used to do a lot, probably twice a week, just, you know, making sure I don't let people know I'm coming, kind of make sure if they're working, doing the job.
I think it's important.
So now I'm trying to kind of, let me just relax. I don't have to drive every day like that. Let me just chill at home, probably looking for deals, looking for other stuff that I can do, and then so I can, grow in the business.
Well, you mentioned right then that, you know, you said that your wife was not too excited with all this. Are you kind of struggling with that work life, family life balance? But, you know, because with that many units and spread out in this area, you're talking about from Sioux City to Beatrice, you're talking about 4 hours.
But the good thing, so my wife's always with me when we're going.
Oh, you guys
so
do this together?
Yeah. Okay. We just go everywhere.
Take the kids?
No, the kids in school or at home. But she always with me going everywhere.
Oh, I love that.
Going. Yeah. So
I couldn't imagine my wife coming to me doing drive-bys.
Yeah, but my wife loved that, just going and check the building.
Well, his wife is retired.
Yeah.
You know, like if your wife was retired, maybe Jessica would go on drive-bys.
It's just like literally this week we're downtown going to something, and I was like, let's stop by real quick at the renovation. Let me show it to you. She's like, no. I'm like, we're like just a couple weeks out. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Home.
Yeah. So even right now, we got it. One deal I'm excited. I bought a nineplex for $50,000. So right now we put in $150,000 into it.
You bought a nineplex for $50,000?
50 grand.
For the whole thing or per unit?
For the whole thing.
Where is this at? And how did you find a nine unit for 50 grand?
But just like I said, so the way I find my deal is just like if somebody put a sign outside saying for rent, I see the apartment complex, I call that.
Okay,
number.
Where was this?
So that one is in Beatrice. It's just right downtown.
Is it condemned?
But when I bought it,
excited.
When I bought it, there was only
he's blinking.
When I bought it, there was two people in there. They were paying like $200 a month. But now we get them out. So we're in the process of putting $150,000 into it.
Is it built a suit nine unit?
Yeah.
Is it built for suit or is it like a conversion?
No, not conversion. Will apartments.
I just want to remind you that you are putting 33% more money into this nine unit property than you did a 30 unit property.
You're right.
Fail. Yeah. If your residents happen to catch this, just know what's going on here.
Yeah. So I'm very excited about this one. So we got a few projects going on right now. This one, that's the one I'm very, very excited about. Yeah.
Are you accepting investors in your fund?
No. Yeah, let's talk about that actually. So Dennis, what do you got?
No. I want to know. How did you buy that for 50 grand? Like, I need to hear that story.
One phone call. So I see you got this property here. You're looking for tenants. So would you like to sell? And I said, I would like to sell. Yes. I think I'd like to sell. Yeah. So he said, I think he wanted 150, I believe. He wanted. I said...
I'm just going to lowball you 66%.
But no, he wanted 150, something like that. I went, okay, let me go look at the property. The property was mostly gutted. The hallways, everything was bad in the property. I say, I have $50,000 cash right now. If you want it, we can close next week or tomorrow.
That cash, offer, I have it. Like he probably picked it up, briefcase, and he's like, "Yeah."
But he said, "Let me go talk to my wife." And then probably a couple hours later, he gave me a call. Said, "Let's do it."
And that's like the classic out when you don't want to negotiate with somebody. You're just like, I need to talk to my wife. I mean, like, what is somebody going to say to you? No, you can't. No, don't talk to your wife. Like, it's a classic out.
$50,000, man.
Yeah,
are you mind blown by that? What you have paid? Would you pay $150?
I mean,
I will pay $150.
Yeah, there it is.
I will. Yeah, easy.
But it was. In rough shape,
it was
right?
Bad like shape,
really
yeah,
rough.
Yeah, but the point is, you would have paid $150.
Yeah, I would pay $150.
So what does that look like when you run your pro forma? Like, what is it probably going to assess?
I'd say probably around $600,000-$650,000
when I'm older. You have $200,000.
But yeah, so now we've been working on it here right now. Right now we renovated 4 units. So right now this thing bringing me right now as we speak right now by $3,000.
Okay,
so with no debt, no nothing.
Okay, so back to my original question though, that led into this crazy deal. Your work life family balance. You say you bring in your wife, but how old are your kids?
So my wife was married before me. So my wife had 3 kids before me, but they all my kids. So we have 5 kids together. But
so how do you take that time? And what's the age spreads between the kids?
But we have the oldest is 16. I think 13, 11, and then we have a 6 and a 5 years old.
No wonder you and Sean Gomez get along so well.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean was at the house hanging out and stuff when he came down.
But, I mean, that's a ton of work and a lot of time on its own. So how do you balance that?
Man, it just I feel like I fall in love with real estate, man. I don't think it's a job. It's just like I love how I can turn something around. It's just when I bought it, distress. It's just there's no balance. It's just I involve my kids are involved into it.
Okay, my everybody. How are they involved?
But just hang out on the property.
Do they love it?
They don't like it.
Do any of them love it?
They're like, none of them. But Dad, we gotta go to the apartment again. You know.
do you think any of them will continue your legacy?
I think they are. But yeah. Our oldest daughter is just saying that. Yeah, that's what she wants to do.
That's the moment. That's the pride.
Yeah.
What was the moment in your heart when you said that?
She's
like,
Oh, yeah.
Were you like, Oh, there it is.
That's what she wants to do. So now everybody in the family like to invest. Kind of. Oh, let me. Dad, can I put some money? Because they understand we multiply money. So like, can I put some money into whatever we're doing? Yeah. I said, oh yeah. So when they have the money, just give me 150, whatever. Just let's do it.
When you think back to when you were CNA, because I'm sure you probably would have done this at least once in your life, right?
Yeah.
You would have think back to when you were when you were training to do PT, you were CNA. You didn't know what was going to happen. You had this child anyway. And then fast forward to 8-10 years later. I'm sorry about my math, but let's say it's 8 years later.
Yeah.
Now you're a successful real estate agent with kids that are actually interested in what you're doing and looking up to it. How does that make you feel?
Man, so it's just I'm very proud, but I put God because I don't know, because I didn't know what I was gonna do. Once I failed school, there was nothing. I didn't know what else I was going to do. But God, I feel like God is the one that put kind of grant into my face. Just like kind of, yeah. But so once I see it, once I listen to grant, I'm like, oh, shoot, I need to get into that. I need to try to understand this, that real estate thing. I think God is the one that brought that thing to my face because I don't know what else I would have done. Because it's just like all my whole family thinking I was like this guy. What this guy doing? You know, I'm not making probably $1,200 every 2 weeks. You know, it just, yeah. So I think it's God, man.
You might need to go to like a 10X conference just to try to meet him and tell him your story.
Yeah. I think I should.
Actually, that's a great idea, man.
Because I
could see this happening.
Your story is amazing. I mean, the fact that this is the first podcast you've been on is honestly mind blowing.
Yeah. So because I'm not out there. I just started to put myself out there probably last year. I think that was the time I just started kind of putting what I'm doing out there, just showing people what I'm doing and stuff like that. Yeah, But yeah, that's probably why. But
there's so much talent in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, there is.
So, well, what's next, JD? So you've got 600 unit portfolio. You've got a family office, syndication, whatever you want to call this, a conglomeration of people that you have. What do you see next for you over the next couple of years?
In long-term goals, yeah.
But right now, I'm just trying to grow this thing as big as I can grow it. So that's my goal. So we're just looking to buy more stuff. But now we're trying to buy more stuff here in Omaha, Nebraska, instead of kind of go to the sub-markets buying. But we're trying to kind of get ourselves a little bit bigger here in Omaha instead of going all the way to those little sub-markets.
I'm going to, if you don't mind, I want to go through let's just spitball what it's like finding a property in another city. Maybe it's close to you, maybe it's not close to you. You own stuff that, you know, you have to drive, what, hour and a half? What's the farthest thing you have to drive for you?
An hour and 45 minutes.
Okay, an hour and 45 minutes. Now, that's not insurmountable, obviously. It's a good, you know, like half an Audible book for Ted. And then you get there. Like, how do you go about setting up the right team to make sure that all your stuff's being managed correctly? You can trust the people there. Let's talk through that. What was the first deal that you ever bought that was outside of your hometown?
But
not Port-au-Prince, but Omaha.
Yeah, but the first it was in Beatrice. That was an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay.
So when I bought this one, it was at the beginning. It was kind of tough to manage because I'm an hour and a half.
What's your first step? So you have a property, you underwrite it, you're like, this is a killer deal, I'm buying it for, I'm ripping these people off, or I'm sorry, I'm buying it at a discount for $50,000, it's worth $150,000 in my mind, and then you know it's going to be worth way, way more than that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do next? So how do you figure out who's going to help you and what they're going to do for you?
So when I started, but now I already know, now I understand, but when I started, it just... I find out somebody in town kind of put an ad out saying, hey, I'm looking for this person, how they can help me. So when I put the ad out, I got a few people that's trying to pay those people.
What do you put the ad on? Like Facebook? Facebook. Okay, so yeah. Social media, for this?
Yeah, and then you try to, you know, each town have some kind of Facebook group, you know? So we just kind of get into that group. And then you put the ad out saying, hey, I'm looking for a maintenance guy. I'm paying this amount, or I'm looking for a manager, I'm paying this amount. And then I got a bunch of people coming to me, and then we interview them, and then we hire one person. If you don't think that person don't fit what we want to do, we fire them, we find another person. And then once we get somebody that we feel like that's a great person, and then we stick with the person, and then we try to make sure we pay that person great so the person can stay with us.
Do you do the HR stuff or do you outsource that?
No, we have an accountant that pretty much do the HR stuff for us, but okay. Now, yeah.
I got a little fun question for you. When it comes to all the units that you've overseen,
mm-hmm.
What's the craziest story that you've ever ran across out of all your management stories? Like, what have you found or what have you seen? Like, Owen's dealt with FBI people. We've had people, we've had dead body stories. We've had all types of crazy stuff. What is your wildest story?
I have all these stories, man. I have.
You can just collage if you want to. This is okay. My favorite part.
Because let me give you that good story. We have one tenant. He's an older tenant. He passed away on the unit. He was on the fifth floor. So,
500 pounds. 500 pounds.
he passed away in the unit, but his rent was automatically paid because we use our folio as our rent. His rent every single month, he just automatically just go ahead and pay. But we never check on the guy. But we smelled the hallways on the fifth floor were smelled so bad, flies everywhere,
big thick ones, big juicy ones.
Oh my goodness, we try to figure what is going on.
Their looks of uncomfort,
but it's just bad in the fifth floor. But it just—I think we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to figure, but it's just sad, man. It just the guy was in the unit
for how long?
Been a week.
A week.
It's about, I think, over a week.
I can't believe you start just smelling that fast.
He was very, very bad, and then it was a bad story on this one. Yeah. And then I'm in Sioux City too. We always have a bunch of, when it's cold like this, people in our hallway. Just we have homeless people sleeping in the hallway, but that's something. Now we're trying to have a, when this building, we have a maintenance guy kind of sleep, stay in the building. So kind of take care of this kind of stuff for us, kind of give him kind of rent, half of rent.
You pay him to stand there?
To kind of sleep there, kind of walk the hallways for us.
Okay.
So he can kind of, we give him a unit to kind of stay in the building so we can have some.
God, that'd be boring. Can you imagine? I mean, oh, he's probably not going to listen to this, but yeah, like, man.
One of Owen's favorite stories he has told recently was he talked about, he had a guy that was a battery collector. And then there was a battery fire, and then he had to bring in all.
Well, he operated a business where he refurbished batteries for power tools. And go ahead, Ted.
No, tell us your story. I was just bringing up your old story. So say,
well, I don't know where you were going.
I'm just saying that's one of my favorite stories, that you had to bring in the group to take the batteries out, and you had to pay a shit ton of money for this.
It wasn't my idea either. The fire department was like, oh, yeah, we called this hazmat company to come and basically take all of it out. And I'm like, What do they charge? What are we talking about here? And they're like, oh yeah, it's like $1 billion per tub or whatever. And I'm like, dude, I will go in there right now and haul this stuff out. Like, you know what I mean? So I don't know where you're going with this.
No, I mean, just crazy stuff that you guys run across.
Yeah. I go through a bunch of crazy stuff, man. Yeah. Yeah. But it's just worth it. We deal with it, and then we know where we're going, and yeah.
Now, being from Haiti, do you have any type of housing that you do just for other Haitians to come over?
So yeah, but one of our problems is we have a lot of Haitian that we provide. So a bunch of immigrant people that they come in, they are hard time to find housing and stuff like that. So we provide housing for them. We help them that way.
Do you get more respect because you're from Haiti, or is it more difficult?
But it's more difficult. Because you know,
they're like, bro, come on.
Because now
that high, the rent's that high. Seriously,
there you go.
Come on, man, Port-au-Prince, yo.
Because now it's just that with my manager, they don't speak English, and then my manager don't speak Creole or French. So now everybody tried to go to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I see this playing out.
So,
yeah.
So it's just now I'm like, yo, it just, you trying to figure it out with her, not me. So that my wife is just like, because I'm kind of trying to be nice with them, trying to show them that I'm not that important. I'm trying to help. It's just getting tough right now.
But it's got to be important to get back, though, to your community, isn't it?
Yeah. It feels good to kind of, when these people come in, you're able to provide them a place to stay and with their family and stuff like that. Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, but at the same time, too, it's a little bit tough with these people.
Well, speaking of tough, there's a section of our podcast that we famously call
Failing Forward.
And this Failing Forward is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online, jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
And with this, it's a section where you've had a fail, where you've fallen on your face, but there is a learning lesson, education lesson that came out of it, something you grew from because of this fail. Do you have an example?
Yeah. So I think on my very first complex that I purchased, when I increased the rent from $200 to $500,
I still can't believe $200 with a straight face. Like, sign me up. So you can't get a crappy car for that much. I mean,
so the tenant wasn't happy that the rent was increased to $500, so she moved out, it was in the winter time. She left all the windows open, turned the thermostat down, pipe frozen, water everywhere. So now, and I just started doing real estate. All my unit, the tenant was on the third floor.
Welcome to landlord life.
Water everywhere, everywhere. It's just like that. That was my first time. I'm like, oh my goodness, there's some bad people out there.
You know what's funny? I was just thinking when you talk to people and they're like, okay, if you were just getting started, what would you do? You know, and then people talk about like, well, you need to have your power team and you need to have like an insurance broker, an accountant. You need to have a, you know, construction person, property management, banker, those things. Nobody has a short list of like disaster shit that's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like I literally just bought a property yesterday and raining from the ceiling and there's ice everywhere or somebody slipped in. Like, you know, you got to scramble.
I remember I did a RIA when it said find your dream team. And I was given so much shit because I think I had like 18 people up on that panel. And I'm like,
it was a lot,
but it was like, literally, I mean, I'm like, this isn't even all the people you need. I mean, that was my point there. It isn't just having a contractor or a banker. You need a whole entire village.
That's right.
And that was the point I was trying to put across by having that many out there.
So in this, that was bad. And then the good thing is that was one of the worst. When I started real estate, that was one of the worst thing that happened to me. And then because it was, I wasn't there, and then ceiling falling off, it just probably water everywhere just now.
I just had a ceiling fall down last night.
And then now, that was one of a bad situation that I.
So what did you learn out of that? What did you learn out of that?
So what I learned is just that when the tenant move out, when the tenant move out, you have to go kind of look at the unit.
But, immediately.
That's one thing.
And not charge $200 a month.
That's
rent.
Right.
That's a good lesson from the previous landlord.
And I bet she was like regretting that afterwards. Cause like,
you're in a $200 unit. Where are you moving to? Like what? You're like, what? You're going to charge me $500. How dare I'll show you. I'm going to move out to where?
Yeah.
The thing that sucks is like, and this is really prevalent right now in social media. If you get on and have the same conversation that we just had, you get so much hate for it. You'd be like, the greedy landlords are charging blah, blah, blah. How dare you raise it on an obviously underprivileged person? You're just taking advantage of them. And then it's like, it's a market rent, and it's not even market rent, actually.
It wasn't market
rent. That's the hard part about coming into a building that's been completely mismanaged and not brought up to like how a successful business actually operates.
Right.
You come into a situation where people have been getting it pretty good for a long, long time. Right. And then all of a sudden you're the asshole for coming in and saying, I'm not a bad person. I'm just operating this as a business and this is market rent or even below that. So it's not that they have it so bad now. It's you had it so good before now. You know what I mean? I'll probably get shit for this.
It's just like the tenant feels so upset and then
$200 a month for rent. Yeah. Come on.
You know, when you mentioned just now that whole raise from 200 to 500 and it's market rent, like and they're complaining about that and people will give you shit because you're the greedy landlord or whatever they want to think about. Think about it like this. When you work in a job or whatever the case is, right? And all you make is what your expenses are, or actually less. Let's say that you work for a job and you get $1,600 and your expenses are $2,000. That's what it means to rent a property under market rent, because you're making less than what your expenses are. When you bring it up to market rent, then you're probably looking at making above, you know, what your expenses are, and then you could start thinking about profiting and that kind of stuff. But people in the W-2 space don't understand that unless you explain it to them in their language.
I was just having a conversation with a new investor the other day, and we were talking about this topic. I'm like, they the world wants you to have affordable rent right now. Mm-hmm. But the world doesn't realize that they're upping the taxes on you. The insurance
exactly.
Nebraska insurance is now becoming like Florida, Texas, and California because
you have to take 2 months of cash flow or 3 months of cash flow just to pay your taxes right now.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, you cannot
explain how we're greedy.
You know, and right now it's considered a good investment if your single family home produces $200 in cash flow, and you got to replace a furnace or replace one thing, and then that cash flow is
for the
gone.
Whole year.
It's gone the for the year. Year, and you're negative.
Yeah. But God forbid that they don't get a raise in their salary and their expenses outweigh their income, and then obviously they feel underwater, and then they're complaining and everything.
But I'll sit there and agree with the tenant. I'll say, hey, you know what? Yeah, rent is out of control.
Yeah.
But guess what? It's out of my control too.
Exactly.
Because I cannot control what the government's doing on. I have rental inspections now. Welcome to that world. And I'm going to get charged, if they come in for a Section 8 check, which I've been running across lately, not through my properties, through clients' properties, they will come in and say, oh, you got to fix this, this, and this. I'm like, hey, I did $100,000 rehab on a property. This is what it looked like when they moved in 6 months ago.
Right.
And because of this and how they live, I can't control that. And then they'll come back and say, no, you have 10 or 30 days to fix this. Mm-hmm, otherwise, they have to move out. And it's not your expense. And you should charge them back for the damages they cost, even though I didn't do it.
That's
the world we live in right now. Yeah. So now you have rental inspections, you have higher taxes, higher insurance, and guess what? The rates have tripled in the last couple of years. So now I got to deal with that also. So sorry, people that are listening to this, that you have no idea how it really works. But it's not the same game, and it is expensive to have an investment property.
Yeah.
And guess what? This is for me to make this make sense. I have to do this. Otherwise, guess what? I'm going to sell this at top dollar on the real estate market, and somebody's going to move into it, and I won't have a rental property available. Yeah. Mm. What do you want?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at that.
Boom.
Owen?
Mic drop. No, this is a tough time to go on record. In the face of, you know, the public, right? It's tough to go on social media right now because you don't know if you're getting trolled by a Russian bot that's just going out there and making comments on social media to try and, like, you know, disrupt the whole, you know, country and our, you know, feelings about everybody else. But it's also where I was on Reddit last night. Do you guys ever get on Reddit?
Yeah.
I actually love Reddit.
Yeah.
And you can search for different categories of threads. And it's basically, for those of you not familiar with Reddit, it's basically a discussion forum. It's an old school, like, analog way of just starting a discussion. And then a whole bunch of people from all over the world will chime in on it. So you can start a thread on real estate. You can start a thread on what's the deal with all the violence and, you know, XYZ part of Omaha or whatever, right? And then people will just chime in on it. What's the best place to eat, etc. But I've been kind of like looking through some real estate threads, and then there was some person that posted a whole bunch of stuff about they started real estate like 3 years ago. They had acquired 9 properties, and it was like, you know, like 18 units or something like that. And they had said, here's my numbers, here's what I bought it for, here's what financing looked like, here's what, you know, all the stuff. And then there were so many people in that thread that were just hating on this person. They were like, this is mortgage fraud. And then I'm like, it's totally not mortgage fraud. I'm looking through this with like an experienced eye, and there's a whole bunch of people chiming in that have no idea what they're talking about. But it's like, you look through this, and that's what's given out to the public for general knowledge, with the understanding that they're not seeking out the knowledge to actually have an intelligent discussion about it. So I was looking through this thread, and I'm just like, I wanted to chime in so bad because I knew everything that they were talking about. And I'm just like, this is going to be a complete disaster and will totally backfire on me. So I think there's the fear of social media retribution is a real problem now that never used to be. You can't have a conversation like this without thinking through what is this going to mean in the grand scheme of things.
You need thick skin.
How can this be twisted, or like, yeah, what's the result going to be where I'm like, I'm fine. I said that, I own it. But context is important.
Yeah. Right? I think about that with this all the time. You know, just what we put out.
Yeah.
You know,
what power Denlis has, the editor over here. Look at him with his mischievous grin.
Hey, I try to keep everybody in the legal zone. And then anything outside of that that's funny, I include it. If it embarrasses you guys, for sure it goes in. So there we go.
He posts that in the credits. There's a lot of people like, I've never made it through a whole entire podcast before. What's in the credits?
All right, we have a section that we lovingly call the...
We're almost out of time. Let's get into the OT with Owen and Ted.
Where we ask the same questions of every guest. You ready for these bad boys?
Let's go. Let's do it.
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
All right, first question for you. What is your first book going to be titled and or about?
My first book, probably, let's say, How to Flip.
How to Flip?
Multifamily.
All right, How to Flip Multifamily.
And I feel like
you could definitely do it.
I feel like Luminate is something that needs to come up.
Ooh.
Luminate and like playing on the wood.
Illuminate your investment career in multifamily.
Yeah. I feel like.
Well, I feel like he needs a partner named Nate now. Like Nate Eccles, Nate Rold. If you guys are listening to this,
Nate Dennis.
Reach out. Nate Dennis. There we go. He's not going to listen to this. He's probably still sleeping.
He's not family. He's not in. Okay. So you have your own podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and you can have anybody in the world on your podcast sitting here at the table right now with you. Who do you have here at the podcast studio, and what's the one question you want to ask them?
So the first person I will have, because when I started, that's the first person that I've seen talking about real estate on Facebook. I will have Grant Cardone on my podcast.
I knew that was going to be your answer.
Yeah. Grant, that would be my first guy. And the question that I would ask him is, so when he was started about doing real estate, so his goal from when he was started and now, what is his goal? The goal when he started.
How's your goals changed?
Yeah.
So being a Cardone fan, right, Grant Cardone fan, mm-hmm. have you seen Undercover Billionaire?
Yes, I watched Undercover Billionaire.
Yeah. What did you think of his story, how it is he did it, and how he was able to build a $1 million company in how long it was?
To be honest with you, I feel like he wasn't real.
Real, right?
Yeah. That's how I feel about it, but since I love the guy, but...
Yeah. I feel like because it was a reality TV series, like there were some things that weren't 100% real.
Yeah.
You know? The fact that Grant Cardone just shaved his head and walked up to a person and they don't recognize him.
Yeah.
It's kinda hard to believe.
Yep.
And
yep.
just give him an opportunity like that, yep, just like yep. that, all
you
of
just,
a sudden.
Just stay leaving the trailer. You yeah. know, stay in the trailer and just
some of those things that, were kinda yeah, yeah. unbelievable.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And then obviously their cameras are wrong, so obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like that's everything is kinda extra, you know?
Extra.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, related, maybe unrelated to calling out Grant Cardone publicly. We're at your funeral now. And somebody is giving your eulogy. Who's going to be? What do you hope they're going to say about you?
I think it's probably going to be my older brother. His name is
Is he the doctor?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe you had a mortician in the family. That'd be no.
It's okay. Probably him. He's probably going to say how I changed my life around from where when I just came to the U.S. and how in less than probably 5 years, how I turned everything, the whole trajectory of the family. So now how I changed that. So I think that's a cool thing. I think that's probably why he will say at my funeral. So how I turned 160,000 to...
A lot more.
So, I think that, yeah.
And the legacy that you created for your family.
Correct.
I mean, you have created a legacy for
your
family.
Yeah.
I mean, if they don't build a statue for you at some point.
So how I changed the whole, how I see a whole family, my whole family changed their life, the whole thing changed.
Yeah. I love that. Okay, so you've obviously, you mentioned Grant Cardone, but like, has there been a true mentor in your life, personally or within business, that has impacted you and changed you? And if so, who is it?
So, to be honest with you, after Grant, I get into the program with Jake and Gino. I'm in that program too. So Gino been a mentor. Talk to Gino, and then I have Bill Ham is my mentor guy. So he just done that, kind of show me how to underwrite, and then show me how some moves, anything that I need, I can give him a call to kind of tell him do this, do that. So Bill Ham is kind of the guy that I go to. Thanks. But he's a big part of Jake and Gino too. So yeah.
Tenless?
Oh, it's my turn? Okay. So, Luma.
Yes, sir.
That's the easy way out.
Mr. Luma.
Hey. UGD.
Yes, sir.
See?
That's it. That was nice. You got it right, man. Nice. You got it right.
Gonna get jitty jitty with it.
When you were a younger in Haiti, what did you want to be when you grew up? I think I know. I would probably guess a doctor because your father was a doctor or something in the medical field.
Yeah, governor.
Yeah, yeah, but I was thinking to be a dentist, but I wasn't really a good student. But I always wanted to, because my dad was a dentist, to a doctor, as a dentist. Just I always looking up to my dad to be a dentist, and then I have a brother that is a dentist too, and yeah, always to be that. But
who's a dentist, who's a doctor.
But the main thing I always do, even though when I met my wife, I always say, I will be a millionaire. Nice. So I always want to be a millionaire guy with some cash.
Does your wife have perfect teeth?
But my wife does. She does.
Yeah. Oh my God. Good question.
What are you excited about in your business right now? What's the plan for Luma
Capital
Enterprises?
Yeah, yeah. So right now, it's just thinking about to kind of go, because the last few years I was gonna go wider, kind of build, go. Right now I'm talking about to go deeper, kind of go deep into the business, kind of focuses on the business to be kind of more like take care of the business, making sure the business running very, very, very well. So I don't want to kind of, because I can grow more, but if I don't have the, to kind of make the running my management, make sure my management, all my managers working that do the thing that they're supposed to do, the maintenance guy do what they're supposed to do, so it can kind of make way more. I'm not saying make way more money. Just like I think we can do something better instead of going bigger. Yeah. Kind of go deeper.
Operational excellence.
There you go. That's right. You got it.
So you mentioned early on, this is a follow-up question here, but you had talked about a couple of deals that you scored that were off market. Mm-hmm. From a pastor was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of found your way into another deal that was a home run. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Like if somebody's catching this and they're a newer investor and they're like, wow, that sounds awesome. Like I would love to buy a multi for my first deal. He got creative financing as part of it, kind of raised some money from friends and family. Like if you were going to start over right now and I said, you have 30 days to go out and find your first deal, what are you going to do?
But if I already have the knowledge, but first, if I didn't have the knowledge, I would go get the knowledge, try to understand multifamily. Once I get the knowledge, I understand. And then now I have to kind of take action and then kind of find somebody that's selling or find somebody that doing what I'm trying to do and kind of get with them and then to find a deal. Or another thing too, since if you buy yourself, just find somebody that if you look, walk, drive around, see if you have a me, that's what I do. I look at poster. If I look at around, I see in front of the multifamily sign a poster that says for rent, sign a number on it. I just call that number and say, hey, would you like to sell this property? Instead of renting this property, would you like to sell it? So usually most of the time, I always say, yes, I would like to sell for the right price. Mm-hmm. And then once I figured out what the right price is, and then I just try to find the money. Because if you find a good deal, I'm sure you will find the money.
Yes.
Every time I get a good deal, I'll find the money.
I like what you said there about looking for it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it sounds like you're driving around looking for properties that maybe are not advertising in the most professional way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and right, you see a for rent sign in front of a multifamily property and you're picking up the phone and actually calling the owner or whoever's going to answer the phone. And you're like, hey, I saw you have a for rent sign, but would you sell it?
That's correct.
And then you take the conversation from there, and you know, hopefully they negotiate or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good tip.
And when that case, I think a month ago, 2 months ago, something happened to me. The same thing. I find a number. I call that number. He said, "Let me call. I'll let the owner know." The owner called me. The owner have 1,100 doors. He's an 85 years old guy. So right now, I think we have an 8 unit, an 18 unit, a 36 unit under contract. But he's just trying me right now.
How did you find out that he had that much more?
But he told me. I talked to him. He called me back. I called the number. It was a manager that answered the phone. Mm-hmm. He said, "I'll talk to the owner." And then I give the manager my number. The owner called me.
Is that a good tip, do you think? Like, if you call a property manager, because typically somebody that's going to own that much stuff is probably going to have either a PM in-house, or they're going to have an external property manager that's going to handle it for them. Right. And you say, "Hey, can you give the owner my number? And if they want to sell, I'm a buyer."
But she said, the manager said, "Okay, I don't know if he wants to sell. I'll just give the owner your number."
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, probably a day later, next day, the owner give me a call. He said, "Yes, I would like to sell." And then I also have this and that. And then
he told you, "I have this property, this property, this property."
Yeah.
Kind of kicking it around. So that's great, because I think it sounds like what you learned from that was, like, that's the question you want to ask. If they don't come forth with it right off the bat, you're like, right. What else do you own?
Yeah. That's the question. Yeah. It's just like, he said, "Yes, I would like to sell. Do you have anything else that you might want to sell?" He said, "Yeah, I think I have this, that I like to sell him." I said, "Okay." Yeah. And then this one, I think we have that 54 door now. We got under contract now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
JD, how can people find you online? And is there anything that you're looking for in your business right now that somebody catching this might be able to, you know, turn you in the right direction?
So, yeah. So you can get on Facebook, which is usually Luma. And right now we're always looking for maintenance guys, and then always looking for a manager, property management person. So just DM me or PM me on Facebook. So,
and also any off market deals you come across of multifamily, you can email him at owen@redladderps.com.
But so I got a few stuff that. A few duplexes and triplexes and Beatrice that I would like to sell to somebody. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay. So, anybody catching this? Ugidi is, did I do that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ugidi is looking to basically trade up, and he's got some off market deals. Yep. Reach out to him. You already heard how to get hold of him. Take some action.
Very good.
Well, I mean, your story is mind blowing. I think anybody listens to it, like, the more you dig into it, it's like an onion you keep on peeling back. There's more and more layers. And I feel like we didn't even get.
Yeah.
We're still on the surface level right now. So I appreciate your story. I appreciate what you do. And I can't wait to get to know you a little bit better. And because you are an active participant at our RIA groups locally.
Yes.
We'll definitely look forward to that. If you're listening to the first time or the 112th time, though, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think of JD. If you have questions for JD, ask him in these comments. Also, if you're listening to us on Apple or Amazon, give us a written review so that way we can shout you out in our written reviews. We haven't had an Amazon review since last year.
Which is sad.
Yeah. And one person that gave us a really nice written review on there, I'm reading, gave us 4-star and 4-star, but gave us a great written review. So if you want to edit that and give us 2 5-star reviews so we're back to a perfect, that'd be cool too.
It's kind of a compliment sandwich. Like, you guys are great. Didn't do so well here, but I love you guys anyway.
I'm going to read the 4-star review. How about that? So it says, Amazon customer says, "No matter what level of investing you're at, you will find every episode is filled with gold nuggets that can be applied to some area of your business." Come on, man. 4 stars for that? That's a 5-star review right there.
he's someone who his teacher, when he was growing up and he was in class, his teacher is like, "You could never get a 10 out of 10.
No perfect scores.
You're going to get 9 yeah, and a half."
He's a tough grader.
9 3/4. Never a 10 out of 10. So, yeah.
You know what? We'll own it. We have 2 4-star reviews.
Yeah.
out of four billion. Yeah, out of 4 billion. So yeah, so we appreciate you guys. We appreciate everything you're doing for us. But please give us a review and like us and subscribe.
Not a 4-star review.
Check out Rhea Radio on Instagram. Check us out on Snapchat. Check us out on YouTube. And we now have a Facebook group where we post a little bit more content than we do anywhere else. So add us on our Facebook group, Rhea Radio. And with that, Owen Dashner, we see us out.
On behalf of Rhea Radio, Santa Claus, Ted Kosh, and Dennis Bertrand, you've been listening to JD, the PT from Haiti. And I'm Owen Dashner, signing off.
Let's go.
Are you stoned today or what? You're awful.
I'm just happy you give me gifts this morning.
He was parked in the parking lot just sitting there when I rolled up.
Chiefing it up?
Yeah, a little like Cheech and Chong.
And then I told him.
Cloud just comes out after.
Okay.
And then he's like, I was listening to Christmas or to Christian music, bro.
Yeah, I was listening to my, you know, my gospel. Because when I come in front of you two sinners, I need to be able to.
Are you serious right now?
Hey.
I need to be able to.
Are you
know?
Serious right
Let
now?
Let he who without is without sin cast the first stone.
Oh, Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have stones in my pockets, I know. And in my pants. But anyway, let's go.
I bet you
that
drown a lot. Drown in the pool. Yeah, that's what I said.
Let's go. How?
Okay, I'm going to try this again. You ready? Three, two, one.
And you're live!
JD, your first book.
Whoa.
You got to get the announcement for the OT.
Did you miss that entire part?
Are we live?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Go.
All right, JD. You're about... Help me. I don't know what's
going on. We're
going
to get in the OT with Owen and Ted.
This is so off book, man. Like, took you like 8 minutes to get your camera ready. Get an Android, is all I'm saying.
It's you and how our listeners can support.
I thought it was the mentor.
He just did that.
Yeah. Thought it was what you wanted to be when you grew up.
He just did that.
What's going on with you, bro?
You just asked him what he wanted to be when he grew up.
Right.
Did you ask him what he wanted? Who was his mentor?
That was beforehand.
Yeah.
Before grew up.
You asked that?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Remember, he said not Grant Cardone. He had somebody in Jake and Gino.
Yeah,
I'm
in Jake and Gino group. Yeah.
Sorry, and you gave him shit about not knowing the name.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm back.
Yeah. That's 50 guys.
Okay. It's 49, mofo.